www.thebrainfarm.com.
This is Chris Evans with a Storage Unpacked podcast, and I'm here as usual with Martin. How are you, Martin, this week?
Yeah, not too bad. I think we've missed summer. Summer's gone. It's cold and grey in not very sunny London.
Yeah, we're in August, so therefore the summer has gone already.
Yeah,
it is. Unbelievable, isn't it? Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've been doing anything this week? Any cheer news?
No cheer news. It just chugs along. I'm not building any more plots at the moment. The price of cheer has collapsed, so I just leave it chugging along, and maybe some point in the next 5 years they'll be worth 50p a block, probably, or something like that.
Or by the time you're long gone, dead and buried, it'll probably be worth a lot of money.
You don't know. I mean, you can track this with any of the cryptocurrencies they go up and down. So, Elon, if you're listening, because I know you're a regular listener, just tweet something about how wonderful cheer is, and I'll be happy.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm lucky enough to be in confinement, in self-isolation at the moment. Son number two went down with the virus. That was really interesting because we didn't even know he had it. He had no symptoms. We just did a random test just to do a bit of a check. So now we're all locked up and not allowed to go anywhere until Sunday, which is great.
Oh, that's going to kill your fitness regime, Chris.
Do you know what? It has. And it's really absolutely irritating because now I can't go to the gym. I'm doing about three times a week. I was playing golf at least once or twice a week, which none of that I can do this week. So that's really frustrating. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're all okay. So it's just a case of just staying at home.
Oh, yeah. And sliding pizzas under the door to son number two.
Yeah, we've banished him under the stairs like Harry Potter. So we've just got a little door and we just basically put it through a little slot we've cut into the middle of the door.
Yeah, or just look out for those owls because they're a menace.
They absolutely are, definitely. Okay, right. Let's. Why don't we talk some tech?
Why not?
Do what we're actually here for. Here's an interesting one that I think has been in the news and talked about by a lot of vendors, but I really wanted to talk about it because I was trying to understand whether this is really hype, whether it's actually got some value, what its value is, and what it says about where we're headed. And that's the idea of what's called GPU Direct by NVIDIA. Now, I'll set the scene slightly before we get into the detail. And we're going to talk about GPU Direct Storage. There are other features of GPU Direct, GPU Direct peer-to-peer, DMA, I think, and another one or two. But we're going to talk about the storage aspect of this particularly. And that's in reference to the fact that there's lots of vendors out there who are hyping the fact that they're supporting this technology. So that's our conversation for today. You know, what do you think? What do you think about the idea of what this is trying to do?
This idea of trying to get data into a GPU without involving the CPU seems to be quite an interesting thing to do. Certainly as we see more GPU compute, yeah, I think it makes sense. Certainly for the big AI, it's obviously aimed at AI, ML, or big data processing workloads where you want to shift these things into your GPU memory as quickly as possible and then start processing it. So yeah, I think it's a bit niche. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's going to set the storage world on fire, but I think for some of NVIDIA's core use cases and core users, yeah, I can see it's got some real value.
Okay, so let's just give people a bit of background here. So first of all, if we look at the traditional way that we would get I/O into a GPU, the main CPU in a system would be the one funneling that data in via system memory. So you'd be reading from storage into system memory, back out of system memory, and writing it to the GPU. So there's like a double step there, if you like, in and out and forwarded on. And you're at the limit of bandwidth there of DDR memory, which obviously is fast, so that's not really necessarily going to be a direct bottleneck. But you're at the limits of how much memory you've got, because you're shuffling it in and shuffling it out, aren't you? So you had a system that had 32 gig. You know, there's only a certain amount of that memory you can use to read data in and then pass it back out to read the next blocks in and so on. So obviously there is a throughput issue there, but obviously the key bit there is the fact that you're doing double read and write and you're using the CPU to do that. And the idea, as you pointed out, Martin, is GPU Direct Storage, or GDS, is there to bypass that process so that somehow, and we'll come onto how it does it in a moment, the data sitting on some sort of persistent storage goes directly to the GPU and doesn't have to be managed by the CPU, but clearly that is that potentially a big saving. So that's the concept. Okay, now I had a quick look. to see if I could work out exactly what's going on here, as to see how this is working. And the description that NVIDIA put out is that effectively there's what's called a DMA engine that sits near the storage or the network card that's connected to the external storage. So by storage, they mean PCIe. By external storage, they mean whatever, but connected to a NIC. Now, when it says DMA engine, the first thing I saw there was this is probably doing some sort of RDMA or DMA type transfer between the GPU and something which is running that DMA engine to get that data moved up into the GPU. And that's not something we haven't seen before.
No, we've seen this a few times. Obviously, this is very much an NVIDIA-focused technology.
Yep.
And I know you have some thoughts about what they might be trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely talk about that. But as an example, haven't we seen this with things like SMB Direct? So SMB Direct was doing something similar, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I don't know how heavily implemented that has been. I've not seen a huge amount of implementations. You might have seen more than I have, but I've not seen a lot of implementations of that.
Mm. No, I haven't really. I've seen it obviously described and documented, but I haven't seen a lot of it. So let's just quickly talk about the two modes here, and then we can go into a bit more detail, see if we can understand what's going on. There's something called local mode, which somehow the data stored on, say, NVMe storage locally is read by the GPU. I'm not entirely sure what the DMA engine is at this point, what is actually connecting to that storage, whether that storage is locally connected and there's something else connected there to do that sort of data mover piece. And then there's a remote mode where you basically connect a suitable NIC, and that NIC is the DMA engine, and it connects to the external storage. Now, in the NVIDIA model, that could be a ConnectX NIC, like a SmartNIC, yeah. You know, the SmartNICs we've seen before. And that's probably the DMA engine there. So there's a little bit of implementation detail I'm not entirely clear on there. That makes me wonder exactly how this actually works. But of course, there is just one other thing to think there, and that's the CPU is still involved in this. So I think what the process is effectively the CPU sets up the transaction that you want to do, the actual data move, mm-hmm. and then it then passes that over, and that becomes a DMA request, RDMA, DMA request, which then goes on in the background. And because that's now so much faster with large block sizes or large volumes of data, sequential throughput, the CPU is involved in setting up the protocol and the you know, the actual connection, and then it passes or offloads that process of transfer to the GDS technology. So in fact, you're still sort of doing the same sort of technology you would have done to transfer the data previously. You're just offloading the data movement part. But exactly how that's done, I'm not 100% sure.
Well, we've seen offload engines for all kinds of things. So we've seen, and obviously, as you say, this is a part of a wider NVIDIA initiative. It's Magnum IO.
That's right. Magnum PI. Not Magnum PI, no. Nobody under the age of 50 is going to understand what you've just talked about there.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
Did they make a new series of Magnum? Did they remake it?
I don't know. Else? I'm sure that Tash is illegal now.
I think it was illegal then, but you know, there you go. Yeah. Okay, sorry, anyway. Do carry on.
I was going to say, so it's all part of what NVIDIA are trying to do. I mean, obviously, I think they're trying to push some other people out. They're very much focused on data center now.
Yeah,
it's all about re-engineering the data center, and it also goes back to a lot of things we talk about. It may have some part to play with disaggregation. I'm not quite sure yet whether it does, but I think that's what we're seeing. I think we're seeing a thinking about the next generation data center, and this is where NVIDIA want to play. And this is where you can see all their acquisitions are in that space now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll come back to that in a second. Let's talk quickly about what we think the benefits of this might be. Now, I've sort of touched on it, and this is going back over it again. It seems to me, looking at the way this is designed and architected, that the performance improvements are for large volumes of data that are really focused on throughput. So, you know, traditional sequential transfers, large block sizes, where you just need to shift large volumes of data to the GPU. And if you look at the graph that I included in our little preview notes, that's pretty clear when you look at the size of the I/O and the cutoff period where you start to see the throughput advantage over a normal CPU transfer. I will put the link to the document that diagram came from in our show notes, but basically it's an NVIDIA document that shows the benefits of using it with a traditional sort of benchmarking tool. So clearly this is about throughput for large block size data, and it's not going to replace all of our I/O. This is not a new super duper technology that's going to come in and replace SCSI or NVMe. This is very, very targeted at a very specific type of workload.
It's a very specific type of workload, which is very read intensive. It's about getting that data in as quickly as possible so you can start processing it. It's, as you say, it's about eliminating that CPU bounce. We is coming in and coming straight back out again. So as I said, I mean, when we're talking about it, it's all about aiming at that AI DSS workload, decision support workload. This is what it's aimed at. So as I say, it's still very niche.
Yeah.
But just an aside, it's really interesting, actually, if you look at what's just happened on the desktop operating systems as well, and actually it's part of games machines. We're seeing this technology already. This technology already exists for games machines, where right. people are reading shader models and things directly from, and it's going straight into the GPU. So, yet again, I'm not sure which came first, but I think we're seeing this come through in the consumer space as well. So, people listening to this isn't just about big enterprise.
Is this similar to the technology that was being put into the PS5?
It is, I believe so. And Microsoft have announced it. They first of all announced it for Windows 11, and now they've also announced their pack porting into Windows 10.
Right. Okay. Good. So we can see plenty of use cases for it. I'd just like to sort of mention the fact that the reason why we're talking about this today, and for something that's potentially relatively niche, one of the reasons we're talking about this is the fact that so many vendors rushed out to talk about their support for this technology. You know, when you see a new technology come out, do you remember when, what was one of the VMware technologies we saw about five or 10 years ago, where suddenly on the day of the announcement by VMware, all of these partners suddenly came out of the woodwork and were like, yeah, we support that. And you know, you know there's been a massive marketing plan in the background to try and promote the technology. And it feels like that happened with this, where we saw VAST and Weka and various, you know, IBM, Spectrum Scale, all sorts of vendors came out and instantly on the same day, yeah, we all support that. All with benchmarks, all were showing what they could do. All pretty similar, to be honest, because obviously there are limitations to that. So there's been a real marketing push behind this, and I thought that side of it was really interesting.
Was it architecture, Chris?
It could be to a certain degree, couldn't it?
Yeah,
finding a way to be relevant in doing something different.
Yeah, is it a way for these storage vendors to make themselves relevant? Is it a way for them to talk about something which distracts away from the fact that their lunch is currently being eaten by the hyperscalers?
Yeah, entirely. Entirely. Okay, but let's talk about challenges then. What about the fact that this is a piece of technology that will need certain things? So in order to work, it needs kernel modifications / drivers to make it work. And clearly the reason for that is there's got to be a technique or a way for the offload to occur within the data transfer that allows you to do that without having to entirely rewrite your applications fully. So, you know, that in itself is always an issue, making sure that your solution works with something that requires that level of invasive changes to the operating system. That's one thing.
Do we think that's how much of an issue is that? It's because it seems to be these technologies end up in the kernels of the big operating systems very, very quick. And I'm assuming that NVIDIA, for instance, will have seeded a lot of this. They will be funding open source developers. They'll be working closely with Microsoft. I think sometimes we make a big issue about this, but I think it's less of an issue than it used to be. I think the open source model has changed that. They just seed some open source developers.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. And actually, maybe that shouldn't be such a big highlight as such a big challenge because of that, which is a very, you know, perfectly valid point. Have NVIDIA come out with their own Linux distribution? Didn't I say that as well? You know, are they likely to have included some of this in there? I'm sure they've done something where they've done their own distribution.
Did they do their own version distro for Jetson or something like that in the past?
No, I don't think that's just straight Ubuntu. I'd have to go back and double check that. I can't remember whether they have, but if they have done that, may, you know, be one way of introducing that into the market. The other thing is this idea of needing hardware support and a dedicated NIC and the ConnectX card and the smart NIC. That to me seems really quite interesting because there's clearly a desire from many of the vendors to push into this market of having a disaggregated architecture. And it makes me wonder how much technology they can put in that ConnectX device, which will then go out across the network and talk to other devices to feed that data in. You can see them trying to build out some sort of ecosystem around that really allows them to drive the GPUs almost without any need for the CPU to be involved in this.
And who have NVIDIA just bought? They went and bought ARM.
Yeah. Well, I was going to come on to that, yeah.
Is this a direct attack on the x86 space long term? Does it make that CPU become less important?
Yeah. I think if you look at the way that they're doing this, we know that they've obviously they're hoping the ARM purchase is going to go through, and that, you know, it's taking forever. Maybe it will close, maybe it won't. But when we saw what they released with Grace, they came out with this idea of ARM CPUs that are more closely coupled with the GPU,
yeah,
and trying to bypass some of these bottlenecks. If you look at what NVIDIA's strategy appears to be, it's to find ways to displace Intel, or at least remove the need for Intel, or the dependency, or the value that the Intel CPU is bringing to the architecture, so they can bring in more of their own technology and effectively push Intel out, or at least heavily compete with them in the data center.
Yeah, I think some of what we say is all about the next generation data center. This is what this is all about. GPU is really interesting, actually, from the GPU. If we think about it at the moment, there's only two real players in the GPU market. It's AMD and NVIDIA.
Yeah.
Although Intel are trying to move into it, and certainly from a consumer point of view, that's what they're trying to do. Now, NVIDIA could be almost trying to push them back out again by coming up with technologies which keeps NVIDIA sort of rock solid in the data center. They don't want Intel turning up with competing GPU technologies, so they might need to make sure that their offering is more and more compelling, and certainly for these very large workloads, which are AI, anything which is dealing with large data sets, which you want to process quickly, if they have this, and I'd be very interested in what the licensing model is. Will this technology be able to work with, say, AMD's GPUs, or will it work with Intel's GPUs, or whatever else comes along? What are they going to do, or is it going to be, well, this is NVIDIA, this is NVIDIA proprietary?
The battle with Intel here may not be obvious to some people, maybe not as obvious to people, but it does look like that. If you think about, say, go back and think about the lock-in that we saw with, say, persistent memory and Optane, and the fact that Intel are very keen on not letting Optane work with any other technology than an Intel CPU. In the PMEM side, this is, by the way. Anything other than an Intel CPU of a certain generation, and it's got to have a certain physical motherboard and all the rest of it, they very specifically locked that technology to their CPUs, and with an intention to say, if you want the benefit of Optane, you're going to be running on Intel. And it looks to me like NVIDIA are trying to basically break that monopoly, or at least repeat that monopoly in their own technology, and saying, if you want that high performance, you need to be using our NVLink, you need to use our GPUs, you need to use GDS and work with our partners and cards like the ConnectX, and you won't have that dependency and the need to use Intel, because at some time in the future, an ARM processor will be able to do all the other features you need other than the data movement. So therefore, go with us, because in these solutions, we'll be the better option for you.
Yeah, it's a one-stop shop. That's what NVIDIA are trying to build.
Yeah.
And I think I don't blame them. It's an interesting world of CPUs, so in some ways it's quite good to do CPU podcasts, and for a long time it's been very boring, but now it's getting more interesting with what's happening in ARM, not just in consumer, but also across the enterprise, what Amazon have done with ARM, what Google have done with ARM with their own processor sets. And now NVIDIA are doing it, well, obviously NVIDIA own ARM, and actually that's going to be very interesting, actually. That will be interesting because there will be a change there. Because remember the way ARM used to work?
Yeah.
You licensed it. They weren't building their own CPUs, whereas NVIDIA will be building their own CPUs, I assume, and also licensing out to third parties, so Samsung, whoever. So yeah, there's going to be some competition, maybe. That's why I think some of the licensees are actually quite nervous about this.
I would imagine they are, because at the end of the day, I don't know what ARM, if ARM has any sort of requirement to work in a certain way. But if you imagine the way that they develop their core, they develop cores and then they license those cores. So if anybody's not entirely sure about that model, they effectively develop, they're all RISC cores, aren't they? They came from the RISC, the RISC side of the Archimedes machines and the original BBC Micro and Acorn and all that sort of thing. So they're RISC machines. So obviously they're theoretically not as fast as the Intel solution, but they're much, more lower powered compared to Intel, which is what they originally started at. And they had a big area in the mobile market and smaller, more domestic stuff rather than in the data center. But it makes you wonder whether as they go forward, they'll look at developing NVIDIA specific core designs that they don't necessarily offer to license to everybody else. You know, I don't know whether they're obliged to license things to everybody else, or whether they would choose to have some they hold back and say this is only available through NVIDIA.
Which is what I think might well happen in the enterprise space. Mm. I don't see that happening in the consumer space, but I can see that happening in the enterprise space as they look at ways to, as you say, to compete with Intel in that high-value data center.
Yeah. I mean, that's quite a clever model in some respects if that's what the acquisition is, because what it says is, we know that we've got the consumer market we don't have to touch. We can just let that go. We can license to everybody, Apple, you name it, everybody who wants that sort of technology. But we'll keep the data center for ourselves, and we'll narrow that to us, or at least we'll control that a lot more tightly than we do today. And that could really be where NVIDIA's headed. That could be extremely interesting to watch, I think. I really would like to understand where they're headed, though, with the ConnectX and the disaggregated architectures, because in the discussion we had with Kevin a few months ago, that was episode 190, where we looked at the Bluefield SmartNICs and DPUs, it makes you wonder where that technology is going to go, because he was, I wouldn't say he was coy, but he wasn't giving us a good indication of where the technology might be headed in general, or specifically. He was giving us some broad brush strokes about how it could be used, but it makes you wonder whether that disaggregated architecture could suddenly become a very different model. And it goes back to this von Neumann thing and fungible and the disaggregated, about building servers that don't even look like servers today.
We've talked about the impossible server.
Yeah.
This is the next step where we can have, if you think about it, you could have a server with a CPU but has 100 GPUs. But that was always going to be problematic without something like GPU Direct, because you're always going to have to bounce your data. So your CPU is in your IO path. Whereas if you want to keep those disaggregated GPUs processing and actually supplied with data, if they can talk directly to it and they're promising extremely high I/O bandwidth, much, much faster than page caches. So I've seen how I can read a figure of 215 gigabytes per second versus the CPU's 50 gigabytes per second. It's so much faster. And then as you start adding these in, and we look at, I've seen servers which have got 4 GPUs in. Trying to keep those supplied, you're destroying your CPU cores, and your CPU cores could also be doing something useful at the same time.
Yeah, so if you look at the architecture, then you think about what we used to see with the typical von Neumann architecture, which, for anybody who isn't aware, it's pretty much every computer that has existed since the 40s, probably except quantum computing, where we've had a CPU with memory, which are directly or very closely coupled, and then everything else sits on a peripheral bus, hence the term peripherals, which we don't really use now, but effectively that was a bus that was slightly a bit further away, but it allowed you to connect many devices to that, so you weren't limited in the same way that the memory bus was needing to be tightly coupled and almost physically connected in that sense. The architecture is moving us towards something where the CPU might become, for certain workloads, certain application types, semi-irrelevant and nothing more than an administrator for what's going on, not actually doing the compute, almost like holding it all together while we push the compute out to these other components that could be CPUs on the DPU, it could be GPUs, and the CPU becomes sort of semi, not irrelevant, but it just becomes just doing the admin.
It becomes the MCP. Go back to Tron.
Yeah, it does. But that's quite an interesting development. Maybe this is what we've needed to get past some of the challenges we've had with the way that systems work. You know, it's not completely breaking the model, but it's certainly changing the model.
Yeah. Does it break the von Neumann model, or do we arguably not? Because actually what's become is your GPU has become your CPU, still got memory, still talking to things. You've just got lots of them. So you're building an MPP, a massively parallel processing system, within your box. That's what you're building Well, people get very excited about GPUs, but you have to think they're just a very specialized form of processor unit.
They're just things that are doing some quick maths.
Yeah, vector processors.
Yeah, which is fine, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And that's, again, I think that's another angle that we've got to, where we've realized that there's a problem to fix, and we fixed it by creating something quite dedicated. Or rather, we discovered that because we built graphics cards, and then we suddenly realized graphics cards could be used for something else. But I think we're getting to a situation where the architecture that we've been used to might not actually fit so many upcoming requirements that we have to change. So what does that mean for our storage vendors? Bear in mind, we are still mostly today's still a storage podcast. We should see or think about the impact for these guys. Does it mean that we should be expecting that all of our vendors need to be supporting GDS? Because if they don't, anybody who's trying to do any sort of high performance workload needs to get there to be able to do that. And is that the reason why we saw such a rush, that these vendors are claiming that they're putting their stake in the ground and saying, look at us, we were first, we've already got this technology working, we're the best, so you should be coming with us?
It could be, but how hard has it been to do? Because this talks NVMe over Fabric. Mm-hmm. Actually have this, let's ask a question, this may be very cynical, this might actually be very cheap for them, very cheap marketing with them. Maybe they've not actually had to do very much, they've just had to certify.
Yeah.
I'm funny enough, I was looking at NVIDIA's blog entry, and they talk about storage being enabled over Fabric, and actually the storage solution they tested with was a storage solution you can't buy anymore, I don't think. They tested with E8.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. But then that is interesting, because obviously that's just using a standard protocol, so as long as you're supporting NVMe over Fabrics, potentially you're straight in there.
Yeah, you just plug it in, off you go. Happy days. So I think the storage vendors maybe make a big splash about this, but it's about nothing. It should just work. It's just using the NVMe Fabric protocol. Okay.
So maybe from a storage perspective, the implications aren't that big here. It's another methodology, protocol, interface, standard one. It's just an integration discussion. It's not actually something brand new from a storage perspective. Maybe the implications are slightly wider for the systems architecture discussion, which is why I suppose we've got the two in this conversation. But yeah, from storage, it might not be that important.
But it could be that use case which make NVMe over Fabric really interesting, much more interesting than they have been with. Unless that's we start true. Seeing NVMe over Fibre Channel.
I mean, that's true, isn't it? Because we've obviously had NVMe over Fabrics around for a while, and I've not really got any clue as to how well adopted it's become across a wider network. I would imagine that a lot of people haven't ripped out their Fibre Channel networks in order to put it in across Ethernet or anything else, in a similar way that nobody really ripped out their networks to put FCOE in many years ago, 10 years ago. Having said that, this might be that justification that says, well, actually, as part of a redesign or an infrastructure, it's another nail in the coffin of sticking with a standardized fabric.
I think you're right. I've not seen very many people ripping out their Fibre Channel SANs and replacing with NVMe over Fabric, for instance. As far as I know, my employer hasn't done so. Well, our SAN isn't the largest in the world, and most other people I talk to, it's not being done. I can see in some niche areas, so actually where this will play really well, anything which requires high-speed decision support. So you think data analytics, you think trading floor, anything like that. They might be very interested in being able to get very large data sets into memory. So that really will generate money. They're probably already on that NVMe over Fabric journey.
Yeah,
I don't think general purpose compute is anywhere near that at the moment.
So interesting then. So really, you know, nice to see that there is a solution out there for a problem. It's not going to change the world. There's been some good marketing by the vendors. Well done. Slap on the back for them. But really, let's see and keep an eye on the way that we see the whole architecture evolving for systems, not just the fact that we've implemented a new technology to just move data across the network a bit faster.
It would be really interesting if maybe some of the storage vendors were to come on and actually start talk to us about how they see it being used and what they think the use cases are. Obviously, someone like IBM with Spectrum Scale might want to come on and talk about, okay, we said we support this with Spectrum Scale, and this is the reason we've decided to do that, because it's interesting, or it allows us to do this, this, and this. So I'd love to hear what the storage vendors have, or whether I'm right, but it's actually been relatively easy for them to do.
Yeah, maybe they won't come on and want to say that. Will they really want to come on and go, oh, do you know what, Martin? It was really simple, but it was a great message. So we just thought we'd push on and do
it. Well, they're not going to talk about architecture. But what I was, so reason I was suggesting that it's been relatively easy to do, as you said. A lot of them have said we support it out of the box.
Yeah, out of the box. Yeah.
If it was hard, well, it'd be one of them.
Yeah, true. Okay. All right, Martin. Good to chat as always. Look forward to catching up next time. And thanks a lot.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.